I think it's really important that a student learns how to do these right away, because as soon as they're solo, what's going to happen if they, you know, start porpoising down the runway and don't know how to fix it? The natural thing for a student should be to go around instead of trying to fix it.
Absolutely. It should. And the first time that I actually did that, I was like, are you kidding me? We're actually turning off one of the motors. Are you nuts? Like, this doesn't seem safe to me. This doesn't seem like we should do this. So if you prepared your student properly, they will never be scared. They're going to be on it. Like, you're on your game the moment that's game time. Like, that's what you train for.
So like, the thing that comes to my mind is a student doing a power on stall and getting themselves into a spin, right? That's really preventable. But at what point does the CFI let it happen and turn it into a learning opportunity versus intervening on it? Aside from the fact that a lot of planes should not be spinning.
Welcome to the Aviation Mentors Podcast, the podcast that takes your dreams of flight and turns it into reality.
Sponsored by Strass Financial, financing your flight training.
For pilots, by pilots. I'm Brandon Martini, a commercial pilot and flight instructor.
And I'm Carson Vasquez, I'm a private pilot.
Whether you're a seasoned pilot or beginner with dreams of flight,
Aviation Mentors is your source for expert insights, industry trends, and inspiring stories.
So fasten your seatbelts and prepare for this incredible journey through the skies.
And stay connected with us on social media for exclusive content.
And visit our website at www.aviationmentors.com and let us be your co-pilot on this adventure.
Welcome back to the Aviation Mentors Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Today, we are actually going to do a part two dose. I don't know, we can say two a whole lot of different ways, of our common CFI debates, part two. Thank you so much for listening last time. We had a lot of fun working on those, actually.
And we always enjoy these because it just opens up the conversation. And
too many things.
It does.
Like what I did there?
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to focus. Our ADHD is kicking in before we even get past the intro.
It's okay. We passed the intro. Now, first thing we're going to be talking about is go-arounds. So, Carson.
You should always go around.
And you should always listen to the song on YouTube.
You know, I shared that song with the software team the other day. Mm-hmm. Because they sent me something. It was like a Filipino little rhyming thing. And it was stuck in my head. And I was like, let me return the favor. Here's this amazing song that'll be stuck in your head about how you can always go around.
Yeah, and I'm sure it did.
It was.
All right. So, first question is, should CFIs enforce more go-arounds to reduce risk?
Absolutely.
I think that CFI should not just endorse go-arounds. They should train go-arounds. You should train somebody on how to go around. Matter of fact, when I was doing a lot of end-of-course exams, you actually have to ensure that the student knows how to do a go-around. So I would let somebody get like a couple feet away from the ground, or they're going to do a full stop, and I would just ask for the option, and they wouldn't really even understand what I'm doing because I'm really talking quick to the controllers. And I take over the radios, and then I would give back the radios to them. But they would know that they're cleared for the option. And no one ever figured that's how I was kind of tricking them into not knowing that they were going to do a go-around.
Well, but I guess you could do a couple different things.
So. Yeah, but I would have them like get a foot away from the ground. I would have them touch the ground and then go around. I would have them do all sorts of go-arounds.
Do you keep your hand on the flaps when you tell a student to do a go-around for the first time or one of the first times? Because I can see a student saying, oh, flaps right away, and then just slam it into the ground.
I keep an eye on it. I don't put my hand on it.
Well, it's not the first time we've talked about go-arounds. I think we talked about last episode not doing things in the sky for the first time.
Correct, and that's a good reason, because if you just told the student to go around and they're going to reset up the airplane, they could
Or flaps up, powerful, instead of powerful.
Yeah, and then flaps up incrementally.
Yeah.
I like to use big words like that when you have to slow down and do something. I always say flaps up incrementally, or you can also say flaps up 30, flaps up 20, flaps up 10. You're now just not saying flaps up. You're adding something to it, right?
Adding more steps. So it's not a one and done thing.
It's not a knee-jerk reaction, literally. So I think that students should expect to go around very early. I actually failed to go around in a commercial airplane for the very first time last year.
Really?
Yeah, I fly a lot, as a lot of you know, personally and for work. And when I went to Alaska with Austin and Scotty last year, the airplane did a go around. And I've never felt a go around in a 737.
What was that like?
I don't know. It was just,
I've always seen them, and it just looks
power.
It looks
power up and go around.
I mean, it looks dramatic in a, you know, a larger plane. Just there's more movement happening.
The trippy thing about it was how big their pattern was, because they did a pattern.
Yeah. I mean, they have to. That's the next step.
That is the next step. So, but you don't think about big airplanes flying in a pattern,
like a VFR pattern.
Yeah, I mean, it's a VFR pattern. It wasn't like going around. It was, they're going to go fly the pattern.
Huh.
I mean, yeah, they're not flying a missed approach.
I mean, that's what I think of when a big plane does a go around that becomes a missed approach.
No.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, it could be, but.
I mean, in conditions, but.
Or even out of conditions, it could be, but.
Just depending on the airport.
No, just traffic. Going around. Yeah, it was really
interesting.
Neat.
Interesting. I think it's really important that a student learns how to do these right away. Because as soon as they're solo, what's going to happen if they, you know, start porpoising down the runway and don't know how to fix it? The natural thing for a student should be to go around instead of trying to fix it.
Absolutely. It should. So students really should be going around a lot more often than they are.
Well, they should get comfortable with it first. I mean, it feels like a maneuver when I was a student pilot and I was like, go around. Oh, this is like a slow flight. It's like a maneuver instead of just a natural instinct, like an option of, here's what you should be doing if things don't feel right coming down.
Yeah, it's a get out of crash free card.
I like that.
Yeah, it is. I mean, instead of get out of jail, get out of crash free.
Well, since we're here, you know, that song says you can always go around. What conditions should you not go around?
There's very few reasons why you shouldn't be able to go around, but it's either going to be weather related or terrain related, usually terrain related.
Or plane related. You have an engine failure.
Oh, that's also
as a one and done.
I mean, you don't have the option for a go around that way. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Next one, engine out realism. You know, I have heard a lot of people talk about like old timers actually turning off the engine in the air, like literally turning it off.
Like they used to do that?
A lot of people used to do that. I don't know if they actually did it for real and that was part of the training and that's how they did it. But yeah.
Well, I can tell you that the planes that they were flying are the ones we fly now, but they were just a little bit newer then.
I get that. Yeah. Yeah.
I can't imagine turning off a 1972 Cessna now and knowing for sure it will come back on.
I can't imagine turning off a 2025 Cessna and knowing for sure it'll come back on.
It just sounds like poor practice.
It does sound like poor practice.
I understand the reasoning behind it, but you can simulate a similar idea just by pulling the power out.
Correct.
And hell of a lot safer. You can put power back in.
Big time. Now, we still do real engine outs on twins. And the first time that I actually did that, I was like, are you kidding me? We're actually turning off one of the motors. Are you nuts? Like, this doesn't seem safe to me. This doesn't seem like we should do this.
Isn't that what your multi-engines students say to you too now?
Yeah, they have.
Yeah, I figured.
And I'm like, nope, we are turning it off. And it's like my favorite thing in the world.
Yeah.
So I see why the old timers wanted to do it on single engines.
For that thrill.
Probably for the thrill. Yeah, everyone's a pilot. It's kind of an adrenaline junkie anyway, so.
Oh, just a little bit.
Yeah, so, I mean, how aggressive should you be on this is the question at hand. And the answer is you should not be so aggressive where you actually, we're talking single engine, turn off the motor.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, don't do that.
But at what point should a CFI start, you know, failing the engine on a student?
Once they're in the emergency procedures section of their syllabus.
That's fair.
That's when they should be doing it. And I would say after the student gets kind of comfortable in the airplane.
Yeah. The instructor I had before you, he would tell me to look out the window. And I only fell for that one time. I only fell for that one time. He realized that I wasn't going to fall for it. So he dropped his pen. He's like, hey, can you pick that up for me? I was like, nope, I have the controls. I think you have two free hands to pick it up. And his plan was once I went to pick up the pen, he would pull the power out. So yeah, I'm not going to fall for that one again.
One of my favorite things about failing an engine, at least on a multi, is I would have somebody look for traffic for me because that's legit.
Yeah.
And then I would turn the fuel selector valve off.
Oh, crap. And so, then let them diagnose the problem?
Well, the thing would be the engine will not turn off right away. It'll just start degrading in performance.
So you freak them out.
Yeah. So they actually think it's a real problem. So I'll just act like it's a real problem.
What would you do?
I'll be calm.
I mean, let's fly through this one right now. So I'm flying along. I'm like, okay. Our right engine is starting to.
Hey, Carson, is that traffic a little close to us over there?
No, I think we're fine. Yeah,
okay, that's good. So now I have physically turned off the fuel selector valve.
So now I'm flying along. And
for about 3 or 4 more minutes.
That's funny. And you're just sitting there just waiting for it to happen. So they start saying, they see what happened. They're the oil
like,
pressure.
There's a problem going on. Like, it sure looks like it. I look at them like, yeah, it sure looks like there's a problem. There is. Yeah, so I ask them, what are you going to do next? And
they go through.
And I say, control, power, drag,
fix,
identify, verify, fix, or feather.
And you'd tell them at that stage?
No.
You.
So
at what point would
okay? So
would
first they control the airplane.
Yeah, keep okay. flying.
Next, they put up the power all the way, right? So now they've got zero side slip set. They've got everything forward.
Yeah, the no power.
And they made sure their gears up and their flaps are up. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now identify what the bad engine is. Okay.
So they do their scan.
It's our left engine. Okay. Now let's verify that. Okay. Dead foot, dead engine. So check on your rudders. Okay. And now we're going to either fix it or feather it. So what we're going to do is we're going to go from the floor to the door. And then we're going to go from the door to the floor. So if we went from the floor and didn't find any problem, by the way, that's where you'd find the problem.
Yeah, it's on the floor. Okay.
This is my mnemonic, by the way. Use floor to the door, door to the floor. And this happens on, I guess, most or all airplanes. I don't know. For the most part, it works on most airplanes. I guess if you had a fuel selector valve up here, you would go floor to the ceiling. I mean,
floor to
door. Door to the ceiling or something. Whatever. You get the point. But the fuel selector valve on the Duchess, which I'm referring to, is on the floor. So as soon as they would go to the floor, they would see, oh, fuel selector valve is out.
Unless they miss it.
Ooh, that would
that's
be
a whole different
funnier.
Conversation.
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation. But if they did go from the floor to the door and they found it, now they can, my last part of that mnemonic is fix or feather. Now we can just fix it if we want. We can just push that fuel selector up. Yeah. I bet you are still windmilling a little bit. And if you are, boom, your engine's going to come back to life. If you miss it, like Carson just said, then you can go around and be like, okay, so now we have to figure out what to do. So now we're going to go back and we can't fix it. So let's feather it. So we're going to start turning off things, right? And then we're going to go back from the door to the floor. And part of that is going to be feathering the prop.
I'm just imagining like the look on your face as you're waiting for it to start happening.
Oh, sometimes I have like a look of worry. Like, oh, wow, this is scary, guys.
I think you did that to me when we're doing my complex. And
I did not turn off the engine on the car.
No, sorry. No, that look of worry. I think you had done something to the circuit breaker.
To the gear.
Yeah, for the gear.
Oh, yeah. I know
that's another one that you like to do.
Oh, yeah. Circuit breakers on gear is always fun.
Yeah, that's a fun one. But you're like, oh, no, the gear's not coming down.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is how realistic do you want to get? And single engine, as realistic as you can get, is distracting somebody and then pulling the throttle. And do you want to scare the student? Not particularly, but in the beginning when you're teaching them how to identify and what it looks like, you're just pulling out the power and just showing them, right?
The first time should not be a surprise on the student, I think.
No, it definitely should
not. That is a terrible idea.
No, but later on, as you're teaching them for real world applications, it should be a surprise.
Because in the real world, you're not going to just say, hey, on this flight, my engine's going to go out. So.
Correct.
You know what time it is, Carson?
Time's a brain.
It's time to talk about one of our favorite companies.
Which company would that be?
Aviation Mentors is excited to be sponsored by the one and only Stratus Financial, dedicated to supporting the next generation of future aviators.
You know, Stratus Financial really understands the financial challenges that students face in pursuing their aviation dreams. That's why they offer student loans specifically tailored to aspiring pilots.
With competitive rates and flexible repayment plans, Stratus Financial helps take your aviation education to new heights.
So go visit their website today at www.stratus.finance. Just to be clear, that is not .com, it's .finance. And embark on your journey towards a sky full of possibilities.
Carson, it's time to get back to what we do best.
The show. Where's that line between training and scaring? Is it just the timing and similar to a solo?
You should never scare your student, by the way. You should make sure that they're alert.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be scary for them. Like when you have an emergency, you should not be scared. Like that is the thing that should not happen.
You should know what to do.
Yeah. So if you prepared your student properly, they will never be scared. They're going to be on it. Like you're on your game the moment that's game time. Like that's what you train for. Mm-hmm. And I've had multiple minor or major issues and you just work through it because your training kicks in. And literally that's all you start thinking about. You don't think about anything else. Start thinking about your training. Start thinking about where you're going to land. Do all of those things.
So you've had things happen, minor emergencies. Mm-hmm. When those happen to you, I mean, you do have a good amount of hours and you're really comfortable in the planes that you fly. But when those have happened to you in the past, what was your thought process? Was it just immediately jump into action?
Aviate, navigate, communicate.
That was the core. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you don't think about anything else. You just work on it. Just get it done.
that makes sense. You have the rest of your life to figure it out.
Exactly. Yeah. I can think through why this happened later on, but now it's time to fix whatever the issue is or get on the ground very quickly.
Well, let's take the flip side of this question. When should the CFI step in? So that was, you know, causing problems for the student and in that training. But what about when the student's causing the problems? At what point do you let the student make mistakes versus intervening early? So like the thing that comes to my mind is a student doing a power on stall and getting themselves into a spin, right? That's really preventable. But at what point does the CFI let it happen and turn it into a learning opportunity versus intervening on it? Aside from the fact that a lot of planes should not be spinning.
I don't let students get into spins. I hear these CFIs all the time. They're like, oh, my student spun me today. I'm like, what are you talking about?
How did you let that happen?
Yeah, that's my thought process.
I mean, you can tell when a spin's going to happen. It's not an instantaneous snap spin. You start leaning and you start watching the ball move. And
like, I mean, there's a point where it will break, but you can cut that off pretty quickly, especially mm-hmm. by just having your feet placed
near the rudders.
Near the rudders as blockers, because some students will press the wrong rudder on all forms of flight. Yeah, they press the wrong rudder. Your feet can literally be there to stop them from pressing that.
Yeah, like a limiter.
Yeah, it's like a limiter. Yeah. So I normally have my feet there as limiters. I'm not on the pedals with them, but they're back just a half inch or an inch from those pedals. So it stops them from doing something stupid.
You can even tell the student. And students that are nervous, that'll make them more comfortable. Like I got to a point when I first started flying that I was just nervous. I was like, hey, I don't want you on the controls, but I'd like for you to shadow the controls. And something like that makes students more comfortable. I was instantly more comfortable.
Completely. And I think like when you are learning to land, your setup for landing has to be a good approach makes a good landing, right? Everyone knows that. But students don't make great approaches in the beginning.
They don't know how to fly by the seat of their pants.
I mean, it's not fly by the seat of your pants.
No, they don't know the feeling. They haven't done it enough times.
Yeah, they don't understand. Well, over time they will understand, but they don't initially understand what controls are over controlled and what are under controlled at different parts of the power curve. So when you are on an approach to landing and people normally go pitch for altitude, power for airspeed, right? That's what people do when they're in the air. But no, it's kind of the opposite of that. They call it the reverse region of command, which I have positives and negatives to calling it that. And it's really a combination of everything when you really get into it. But I tell everybody I used to say the power is like an elevator, but I don't like saying that anymore. And I need to come up with a new way because it confuses people. Actually, it's kind of the same thing. Yeah, your power turns into your elevator. I like that. Think about it. An elevator goes up and down. What does the elevator do on the airplane? Goes up and goes down. So I think I still want to come up with a better way to explain that.
I understand what you're saying.
But essentially, when you put in the power, you go up. When you pull the power out, you go down. I mean, that's kind of how it works.
If you want to go faster, you pitch down. If you want to go slower, you pitch up.
Yeah. For airspeed, power for altitude.
Yeah, it's not something that initially makes sense, though, because you don't understand it. You haven't done it. It's like we learned how to drive and you started parking. Are you telling me that you nailed that parking spot the first time where you were on the lines and messing all up? You don't have a frame of reference yet.
I was perfect. No, but here's actually a really good example about like the car thing. So Austin, my son Austin, he'll be learning to drive in no time. He's like a year away from his permit, right?
That's scary.
It is scary. And he's asking me yesterday, hey, is it really hard to drive? I said, Austin, you've driven around my truck in the desert and stuff, and you've driven.
Austin, you landed a plane.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, I can land a plane. It must not be that hard to drive. Yeah, that's all true.
It's more stuff to hit.
He said, how about getting on a freeway? He said, it must be scary. I was like, the first couple of times you get on a freeway, it's like the most nerve-wracking thing you'll ever do in your life.
Because it feels like everyone's flying by you at full speed.
And you have to learn how to manage that speed. Getting onto a freeway, the same thing is happening when you're learning to land. But back to what I was saying before I went on all these tangents, and you did too. When you're learning to land, you should have a stabilized approach coming down, right? But most students are like this. Like they just can't figure it out. And they're just kind of going down, like wallowing down or going up and going down the whole time. And it's not stable at all. But if they can stabilize it by the time they get close to landing, then it's okay. And a lot of students will be messing around until they get closer to the runway. Then they will stabilize very close to the runway and they will make a decent landing. So I will let students make the mistakes in that stabilized approach until they get really close. Now, if it's really unstabilized or way off or they're super high, I'll just tell them to go around and we'll just restart this process, right?
Yeah.
And then I'll explain to them how hands-off you can be on the airplane. Like I remember in 172, you can put 20 degrees flaps, pitch at 1700 RPM, and then you could pitch for 65 and you can trim it for 65 and it'll literally come down on a perfect approach.
I've seen you do that.
Yeah. And if you show somebody that the airplane will do it on its own and that they are the problem, that normally kind of breaks that stuff in. So back to what we were talking about on should a CFI step in? CFI should step in whenever safety is at risk. So when we are 300 feet from the ground, my hands are real close to the controls, but not on them. Student needs to understand, and I don't have my hand on this side because I'm on the right side, right? I'll have my hand so the student can't see it unless they're looking like through the peripheral view.
Well, it's right? on your knee or something and you're just kind of cupping it.
I'll also put my knees up, which will block them from doing anything stupid close to the ground.
That's really smart.
But I remove my knees. I lower them if I need to get on the rudder pedals or they need space. Yeah. But there's little tricks that you can learn over time. For me, I don't like stepping in unless they're doing something
egregious.
Yeah. If they're doing something really unsafe or they are reinforcing some really bad habit, then I will cut it off and step in. There's also a story because I went flying with Christine this weekend and we were telling a story about how we were looking outside one day and I took the controls and I dove the airplane. And I said, my controls. And I put the airplane in a dive. And then afterwards, she asked me, why did you just do that? And I said, because I could see the whites of that guy's eyes in an airplane that was heading right towards us. And that was a good reason why I took the controls. So there's some different reasons for this. And I would say that's the reason why.
Yeah. I mean, the CFI is there for guardrails, safety net, right? All sorts of things. Your entire job is to keep that student safe and provide a comfortable learning environment for that student.
Exactly. And then you're the professional there to make sure you take care of that. So
yeah, exactly. That's why, as much as we joke around, I feel very safe flying with Brandon. And that's just part of being a good CFI, I think.
It is for the most part.
I'm not trying to butter you up like a biscuit. Don't worry.
Yeah, don't worry.
I'd talk enough crap on you later.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Well, thank you everybody for listening to today. I bet you anything we're going to have a part 3. Trace.
Yeah, we enjoy these.
So we'll have a part 3 on this coming soon. And thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to visit us at Aero Summit. That is in May. Let's see if Carson get it today.
20th through the 23rd.
21st to the 23rd.
Dang, I'm still wrong.
21st to the 23rd. Looking forward to seeing you there in Las Vegas at the Wynn Resort and Casino. And by the way, if anybody here has a Founders Club card, I just found out yesterday because I have a Founders Club membership, they will give you a free status upgrade at the Wynn.
No way.
Yeah, it was kind of cool.
The Founders card actually does something?
Yeah, actually, it did a whole bunch of things. I looked through it yesterday.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, and we're not sponsored by them, so go figure. but if you are a student pilot, I know there's very limited supply for a complimentary ticket. You can use the code Stratus Special on checkout. For CFIs, use CFI Special, and it gives you only a $50 ticket rather than the few hundred dollars it cost. If you are a flight school or a professional at a flight school or in the flight school industry, you should be at this event. We're going to have amazing speakers and it's going to be huge. We're also going to have a ton of vendors.
Yeah.
I mean, there's airlines going to be there. We've got resume writers there to help CFIs with their resumes. We have vendors for every single type of thing that you would need as a flight school. Lightspeed just confirmed that they are going to be there. I'm pretty excited about that. That's going to be a new partnership of ours with Stratus.
Are you a Lightspeed fan?
I love Lightspeed. Yeah, I kind of want to get like a Lightspeed sticker and put it on the side of this.
I was actually just thinking that while I looked over and I saw Lightspeed, the shirt. Yeah.
Cool. So outside of that, we're looking forward to seeing you at Aero Summit. But if you'd like to reach out to either one of us, you can reach us on our emails, Brandon@aviationmentors.com, or for Carson, it's Carson@aviationmentors.com. Of course, our wonderful producer, Mark, it is producer@aviationmentors.com. Don't forget to hit like, follow, subscribe, share, all the things you love to do on social media. It really helps us grow the aviation community and, of course, help grow the podcast so we can continue bringing great content like today over to you and your friends.
Yeah, we love doing it, and we hope you guys enjoy listening. And as we wrap up for the day, remember, we're here to guide you in your aviation journey. So fly safe and enjoy the ride.
See ya.
See ya.